Good morning.
Good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful, as usual.
Well, excellent, excellent.
It's a beautiful day in Texas.
Well, I had heard, because earlier in the week, it was supposed to be like in the 40s today, and I don't think it's going to be now. It's going to be considerably warmer than that. Not as warm as yesterday, not as warm as tomorrow, but still not too terribly bad, like around 60-ish the last time I checked. So, yeah, I think it's going to end up being a pretty decent day.
And we're not going to have the blue norther, looks like, so we're going to be in great shape.
Yeah, I don't know anything about a blue northern.
Well, I'd heard it earlier in the week, and I was a little worried.
Really? And that's a thing, the blue northern?
Yes, a blue northern is when the wind and the rain or snow comes and hits you hard in Texas.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Well, no, we're not going to get that.
No, we're going to avoid that, so it's going to be a great weekend.
Yeah. Perfect.
All right. Do you think we should give out the phone number?
I think we should. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your number is?
877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're right next to Ivy Cottage at 3105 Big Spring.
Now, this is all about growing your money so you can retire happy, wealthy, and early. And I know a lot of people, we talk about retiring early if you can. There are some people that don't actually want to retire early. They like going to work. They like having a purpose. They like getting up. They like going someplace. They like having people depending on them. And so they don't want to retire early. But the key is, either whichever way you go, the key is to making sure that you plan in time to grow your money so that you have the option if you want to.
That's right. And the old boys that procrastinate, they don't come see us till they've been listening to me for 6 months. Those old guys may not be ready to retire. And we talk about that every week. If you need $75,000, if you need $100,000 a year for retirement, you know, it's going to take some money. Someone asked me the other day, can I retire on $300,000? Not for long.
Yeah.
It'll be gone in 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
So you've got to make plans where you're going to have income from your interest every year for the rest of your life.
Well, see, and the other thing that people need to take into consideration, one, when you retire, when people are factoring up their expenses, one, when you retire, you need to have everything paid off. So no house debt, no mortgage, no car payments. You have to have everything paid, no credit cards. All that needs to be off the table.
And that's what we tell them every week. If you still got debt, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Because by the time you're 60, you should have no debt. If you have debt, you're doing something wrong. And we talked about the couple the other day that he was making a tremendous amount per month, but then he invested in all these trucks, and it's taken all their income. You know, they would have a lot of spending money, a lot of retirement money, if it wasn't for that. So you can't go off the rail and do something that's not making a dime.
Yeah.
You know, your wife ought to divorce you over that. I mean, you know, it's not a good thing, let's put it that way. And, you know, when people come to see me, they say, Faye, I've got this much income, what can I do with it? Well, you need to, if it's in the stock market, you know, you're taking 100% risk. There's always risk, but it's not as great as the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why people come to us.
Well,
and they want to get it solidified where the money is safe and they've got a chance to make money every year.
Yeah, and especially as you get closer to retirement, that window of recover time, so to speak, from, you know, if something were to happen and people were to lose, you know, kind of like again in 2008, if we saw that again, you know, how much time do we have to recover? We saw how long it took a lot of people to recover from, you know, what happened in 2008. Some are still not recovered, but for most people it took about, what, 7 years?
It took 6 to 7 years. And people came into my office in tears.
Yeah.
When they lost all that money, a lot of them said, I was going to retire next year. I cannot retire now. You know, my portfolio was down so far, I can't do anything but continue to work.
Yeah.
So it made a big difference. And we know some people from Odessa that have never recovered. They had retired. They lost so much, they went back to work. The husband's working again and the wife. So, you know, it depends. At 50 years old, 60 years old, how much risk can you stand? Do you want to risk everything? And is the return worth the risk? That's what people ask me. Well, and I say, go back and look at the last 5 to 10 years. What have you actually made in the stock market? Has it been was the reward worth the risk? And they come back, and I had one guy say, after 17 years, on an average, he made 2.5% a year.
Wow.
You cannot retire on that kind of earnings.
No,
you need
a
lot more than that. And so when people come to us, I tell them, we don't want to put everything in one policy. You must be diversified. If you're not diversified, you're taking too big a risk.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, when people say, you know, should I leave everything in the stock market? Well, obviously, it's a personal question that only that person can answer. Most of us would say probably not. It's you need to be diversified. Not only if you want to keep some in the stock market, that's fine. But as far as investing in life settlements, like what you're talking about here, even that situation, you want to be diversified, because the plan is that you get on this trajectory and you build your wealth over time. It's not just a one-time thing. You invest and you're done and you're out and you go and retire. It's not like that at all. This is a plan that you put together for several years. And so especially if somebody has been investing and growing their wealth for, we'll just say even since 2008. So for the last 11 years, maybe somebody has been really consciously trying to grow their wealth, investing in Wall Street. As they get closer to retirement, that window closes. And so they're looking for a safer type of investment. And so when you're planning for retirement, you need to look at two things. And this is what we call the two E's. One is expenses, and two, emergencies. And those expenses are based on, you know, no debt, how much are you going to need? And that includes if you want to travel, if you want to, take the kids someplace or whatever you want to be. Those would be your expenses. But the other E is emergencies. And I don't think a lot of people really consider that. Hey, something could come up. You could get sick. You could have, you know, who knows what. And so you have to have even more set aside for unexpected expenses.
Well, and that's why on everything we do, we say, how much money do you have for emergencies? If you don't have emergency money, we're not going to do it. And that's just like the people that come to us and say, all I've got is $100,000. We're not going to do that either. You've got to, our minimum investment, of course, is $100,000, but you have to have more assets. You have to have emergency money. Like a lot of people have a ranch, they have a farm, they have rent houses. We know they're solid, and if they're accredited, I'm not going to worry about them, because I know they've got either $1 million in assets that they could call on some of that, or they make $200,000 a year. If you make $200,000 a year, you know, you're in good shape. We know you have emergency money, and we check all this. If you have all this, yes, we will let you invest. And then about every 7 years, your money will double. And we always say, okay, how much do you want to put in? And they'll say, well, Faye, I've got $300,000 or $400,000. How much should I put in? How much do you want to make money on? Do you want to make money on $100,000 or $300,000? And we leave it up to the client always. It's not up to us. And we always say, it's your money. It's not like in the stock market where they take the money and they make all the decisions. We don't do that. We say, it's your money, and we want you to grow it as you want to grow it. And that's why we say, okay, we're going to put maybe $50,000 in each policy, or maybe $75,000 or $100,000. Depends on who the person is and how much liquid they have. And that's the way I like to figure that. And then I want to make sure when they retire that they've got some cash. Like I've got some clients say, Faye, keep me $200,000 at all times. And we do that. I've got some that say I need $60,000 a year. Well, we'll put $120,000 aside where they've always got that cushion for withdrawals. So they always have the money to withdraw for whatever they need.
You know, I was talking
about
go ahead.
And if they're 50 years old, we don't have to do all that. But if they're 60 to 65, you know, we have to make sure they have the money to withdraw every year. But they've got to keep the interest going. Like you said a while ago, you can't say, well, we're going to do this for a year and take our money out. That's not the way it works. It's a retirement investment where that every year, once you start, you'll have cash coming in, and we put that back in policies to get your interest up, where you'll have interest the rest of your life instead of just 1 year.
Yeah, and that's another key for the rest of your life, because people, I talked to a gentleman earlier this week, and he was planning on investing up until the date of retirement. And then once retirement date hit, he didn't have any plan after that. And so we were talking, and he realized, oh, wait, I still have to grow. It's not just getting to retirement date. It's it's about growing even after that, because I don't think people realize that, hey, once that steady paycheck is gone, that cushion is not there anymore, and your retirement completely depends on whatever wealth you have, that can get a little bit scary. The wonderful thing about a life investment is it keeps going, but it keeps going in a safer way, so people don't necessarily have to worry like they do in the stock market. Like, hey, I'm retired for 3 years, but in 3.5 years is the stock market going to crash and I'm going to have to go back to work at age 75. That's not how this works at all. It's much safer.
Well, and what people don't realize, it is in a life insurance policy. Everybody has a life insurance policy. And if they was to die tomorrow, they expect it to pay off, right?
Yeah.
So that's the way it works. When we buy these policies that people have cancer, it's stage 4 cancer, we know they're going to die, and it's like, if it's a 24-month policy, they're going to make 24%, you know. They know they'll make that much. That's what the contract calls for. It's not wishful thinking. It's what we've agreed to pay. So they know they'll get that. If you're in the stock market, you don't know how much it's going to pay. It's a guess. Mm-hmm. It's, I hope I make 24. I hope I make 5 sometimes. And on Wall Street, they're making a lot sometimes, but it doesn't come down here to the heartland. You know what I mean? Sometimes our clients aren't making that kind of money. So they'll come to me and they'll say, I'm tired of the stock market. I've had it. No more, Faye. Take my money and invest it. You know, 2 weeks ago, I had a gentleman brought me a large sum of money, and he said, I've had it. I'm not taking any more risk. I don't want any more downturns. I don't want any more recessions. He said, I'm 63. I'm going to retire in 2 years. I can't take the risk anymore. So that's when they finally wake up and say, let's go talk to Faye. Let's see what she can do for me. And that's the first thing they say when they get there. What can you do with this amount of money?
So when somebody is in that position, do you recommend that, is that the point that you recommend maybe starting to back off on the Wall Street investment types of situations and maybe go to something more conservative? Or do you recommend people start getting a little more conservative earlier in their investment life?
Well, I say, how much can you afford to lose? And, you know, I let that sink in. What can you really afford? Can you afford to lose $300 or $100?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody says, no, I can't afford to lose any money. Well, then take a portion of it out. Take a portion out, put it in a life settlement, and see if you like us. If you like us, put more with us. And a lot of people say, you know, my cousin's with you, 4 friends at work are with you. I know how it works. I know how much they've made, and that's what I'd like to do. So that's when they decide to make the switch, get out of the stock market, and put it with us. And a lot of people have been with us a long time. You know, I had a client that said, on those policies that matured in December, she made $50,000. Well, that's quite a bit of money to make in 1 month.
Yeah, it is.
And I had several people that made $90,000 this year on their returns. I think that's very good.
That's incredible.
I think so, too. Now, not everybody had policies come due this year. But as you know, we finished up the year. December had 8 million in maturities for our clients. That's a lot in 1 month.
Yeah, it is.
And for the year, that puts us at about, what, 19 million in returns?
Wow. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. We had several policies that had went over. They were late. We were glad they matured. But most of them were early. So if you had an early return, it sweetens the pot because you can turn around and invest it quicker. So it really works out. And then a lot of them were just on time, within a month or 3 weeks of the deadline, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So when we do this, every time we do it, we study the policies. We say, is it stage 4? Is it progressing? Has it metastasized? If all those answers are no, we're not buying the policy. You know, we're not going to take that risk. Who wants to buy a policy that's in remission?
Exactly. That could go on forever.
it could go on 3 or 4 years, and therefore their return would not be great. So we always make sure that the stage four is progressing, that it's 24 months, 18 months, 12 months, and then there's certain types of cancer that come in quicker, like pancreatic and stomach, and we're always on those. If they come up, we're going to bid hard to get those policies.
Mm-hmm.
And we're bidding on policies, as you know, every day of the week.
And so let's talk for just a minute about how a life insurance policy actually becomes an investment opportunity. There are people who are diagnosed with stage four cancer, and anybody who's ever been in this type of a situation before, whether it's themselves or a loved one or a friend, we all know that cancer treatments are very, very expensive. And so...
Yeah, we talked about that last week, that I just found out that chemo now is $15,000 per treatment.
Wow.
And that's besides the surgery. So you're looking at $200,000 for surgery and treatment.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people, they've got to sell their life insurance policy. That is their main asset, that they can get quick cash.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they come to the brokers. And as you know, we use three brokerage houses, life settlement brokers that are licensed to do this. And these brokers bring us these policies every week. And we look at them, we bid on them, and sometimes we don't even have to bid. Abacus, in the last month, has had several. They've already bought. They know what we're looking for. They bought the policies and said, are you interested in buying them? And, of course, we were. And they know that we will not take a policy over 30 months. They know if it's not progressing, we won't take that. And there's all kinds of things that we will turn down.
So when you talk about an 18-month policy or a 24-month policy or a 30-month policy, for those who don't know how that works, what exactly does that mean?
Okay, it means that the reports that we have from the doctors say, this client, we think, will make it 24 months with the cancer they have, but we think they will be dead in 24 months or 18 months or 10 months, whatever it is. So then we study it to see if we concur. If we think the same thing, we're going to buy that policy if we possibly can. I looked at one yesterday, and they said, Faye, you looked at this 6 months ago and turned it down. I turned it down again yesterday. It's not even better today than it was 6 months ago. So we're not going to do it. We don't want the exposure. I don't know why the brokerage house thought they were going to slip that in and that I'd fall for that. But when I read it, I said, this guy's not sick. Yes, he's had cancer, but it's not progressing. He's in remission. We don't buy anything in remission. We don't know when it might come back, and we can't take that risk for the clients.
So you're very selective about the policies that you bid on. You don't just take anything that comes across your desk. You're very specific. You're looking for very specific types of cancer. You're looking for treatments they've done. You're also looking at treatments that they haven't done.
This is right, because remember, they're right in the middle of their treatments. If they've got stage four cancer, they're fighting everything they can. And the doctor will say, well, they got cancer. Let's say it's brain cancer. It happened in 17. They operated, and now they're seeing all the little fuzzy things up there in the brain. So they know they didn't get it all. Nobody has ever survived brain cancer that I know of, because even if they operate, and lots of times it is inoperable, it'll come back shortly. The cells are still there. It's like when women get ovarian cancer. It's a deadly, deadly cancer. And you can try to get it all, but you're not going to get it all. And the treatments just don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, pancreatic cancer is the deadliest. And then I would say ovarian and breast cancer are next.
So you look at these policies, and you can see, you know, when somebody's in remission. What about when somebody seeks alternate treatment? You know, maybe there's some kind of experimental treatment in Germany, or, you know, how does that type of thing affect whether or not you bid on a policy?
I'm going to bid it every time, because when they seek alternate treatment and say, I'm not going to have surgery, I'm not going to do chemo because chemo is so bad, and it is bad. It's worse sometimes than the illness. But if they go to Mexico, we've had people go to Germany, and when they came back, the doctor said it's too late. You know, all the treatment in the world is not going to save you now. So now they just have to prepare for the end. And that's when, you know, but we're going to buy their policy if we possibly can.
And that's because the cancer has had time to progress aggressively.
That's right. And lots of times I'll look and it says, okay, they had lung cancer. Well, we look at it, and it's already metastasized to the liver and to the ribs. If it's in your ribs, it's in your liver, you're not going to make it. And, of course, stage four means it is end-life cancer. They're always trying to get us to buy a stage two or stage three. They might survive that, but you will not survive stage four. There's just not any way to do it. And lots of times they'll say 24 months. It may come to do in 12 months or 6 months. You know, back in May, we bought that one cancer policy, that breast cancer. The lady lived 2 months.
Oh, wow.
So it's not an exact science. If it was, we would really have something, if a doctor could tell us the exact time. And, you know, last summer, back in the middle of the summer, they sold me a 30-month policy. I looked at it and said, it'll never go 30 months. This is a 12-month policy, and I was right.
Wow, that's a huge difference.
Well, they had missed some things that I saw in there by reading it three or four times and studying the treatment they had. It was in too many places.
See, now that's the brilliant thing about what you do is because you've done this so many times, you know these things to look for, and you're very alert. You're very conscious of going through every single report, looking at every I, looking at every make sure every T is crossed, and you spot these things, and you don't just kind of haphazardly just bid on anything. And if you're tired, yeah, we'll just take this or whatever. No, you're very meticulous about going through these reports. And so when a report or a life expectancy comes across your desk and it says, okay, 24 months. We think this person here is going to live 24 months. That's how the policy term gets labeled as a 24-month policy or 18 or 30 or whatever the case may be, because that's when they expect it to mature. And so at that point, it's about 1% per month. That's what the policy will pay out. So if it comes in early, they get the full 24% or whatever it's labeled as. They just get it early. Now, what happens if it goes over?
Okay, if it goes over, there'll be premiums due, unless, and we have had this happen all the time, they'll have a rider on that policy that says, if you get sick, we'll waive all premiums. So sometimes there's not even any premium, even if it goes over. But most of them do have a premium. We try to make sure it's not real high. In the past, on those old policies that we talk about all the time, those premiums are high because they were senior citizens, which we do not do. We run from those. But we didn't run fast enough on those three, did we?
No.
But anyway, the others, they have small premiums. It will not hurt them. The premium may be $300 a quarter. It might be $500 a quarter, but it's manageable. It's not going to hurt their profit that much.
So let's run some real simple math here, and this is just a general example. Obviously, every case is different, but since you talked about the cost of premiums, I want people to understand that if they do have to pay a premium, in most cases, it's a very small percentage. So the minimum you said earlier is $100,000. Say there is
That's
a
right.
24-month policy. That means
right.
that they're going to make 24%. That means on a $100,000 policy, they're going to make $24,000. So say it goes 2 months over, or let's just say 3 months over.
Right.
For a premium to be $500, that means that they can take their $24,000 profit, take $500 out, and they'll end up with a net profit of $23,500.
That's right. But let's say it was even $1,000 a year and it went over 2 years. That's $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
So they still have a very comfortable profit. You know, it's not going to break the bank. And we have this happen all the time. All these policies that matured, you know, their profit was still there. You know, the one that went over, it didn't hurt them. They got paid. And they had paid very little in premiums on that year that it went over.
Now, I already know the answer, but I'm going to ask you this anyway because I'm sure somebody's thinking this. What's to prevent a policy from going over for 5 years and it'll suck up all their profit?
Well, The odds of that is very, very low, very low. The only ones we could say that's happened on is those three old policies that we talk about all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We bought those unaware that seniors, God bless them, are old, but they're not sick. And those have went over. They're several years old. And they're 94 years old now. And we're going to break even on those, but I do not think there'll be any profit at the end of the trail. But everyone else will make profit on all their other policies. I'll be shocked if there's a lot of profit left on those old policies.
And that's why it's important to note that that's why you bid on stage four cancer policies only, because the odds of them going 5 years over, 10 years over are so small, the risk is really, really, really tiny.
That's right. And, we study them and study them. The other thing we study is our providers. Which one is doing the best job on calling it right? We've got 21st Services. We've been doing business with them for years. They've been in business a long, long time. A couple of years ago, they stopped everything. We were all complaining. Your LAs are not very good. It's not happening when you say. They stopped. They redid all their computer models. They redid the way they do. And now they're coming in right on top. Their LAs are good, and they're very close to what they said. We've got Fasano. Fasano always goes long when it's going to be short. Fasano will say 18 months on cancer, and it'll be 9 months. So we know that they're conservative. Then we've got AVS, and AVS is good. But we went back and did a study, see who's right, how many times they're right, and how many times are they wrong. So we do have the best providers in the business.
And so really, by going back and analyzing your own data, you do two things. One, you make sure that you're still getting valid, credible information, because that's important to know as you bid on these policies. And two, in this case, it sounds like by you analyzing the metrics and then going back to them and saying, hey, your LEs, life expectancies, are not accurate anymore, that caused them to go back, analyze the data, redo their formulas, and improve the situation, which in the end helps out you and your investors.
That's right. It helps out everybody. And they're very good. The new computer model works, and it was not working good, a couple of years ago. But all these people, they know their business. Just like I would put Fasano up against any doctor company in the United States. They're that good. When Fasano says, this about a cancer, I believe them. Several years ago, I called them because I was having a problem, with this cancer. And I said, I don't understand it. I need some help. And he said, it's like this. If it's got that seam down it, they will not operate. And so that's what we learned about that particular cancer and how to look at it objectively and know whether it was going to work or not, and to know if it was 24 months or if it's going to be 6 months. And they're very good about that. And you can always call any of these people and say, I need help on this one. I need to know if it's really going to go long or what the problem is.
Okay. So if it goes long, we talked about, somebody may have to pay the premiums. That's one of the risks. There are two other main risks with the life settlement.
That's right. The first risk is if it goes long, can you afford it? If you can't afford it, you should not be investing, because these are all accredited investors. They can afford it to go over. The second risk is it is not liquid when it's in a policy. Remember that. You have put your cash in a life insurance policy, and it's not liquid till it matures. When they pass away, it's mature. We can do one of two things. We're going to roll it over, or if you say, I need a new pickup, you can take it out for a new pickup. But most people do not, because it's IRAs, and they would have to pay a penalty if they're under 59 and a half, plus the taxes. You're looking at 30%.
Okay.
So they don't want to do that. So that's why we do it that way.
And so then the third risk?
The third risk is if a life insurance company ever went broke. We've never in Texas had a life insurance company go broke and not pay a claim. And remember, you've got the Texas Guarantee Fund that covers any claim up to $350,000. Also, all of our life insurance companies are worth billions. You know, the other day I looked up Midland National. They've been in business 100 years, and there was $58 billion.
Oh, wow. That's with a B.
Yeah, that's with a B. So when we say we only do business with A-rated companies, they're all worth billions. If they get in a jam, another company will buy them instantly because the premium income is so great. I would love to own a life insurance company. I mean, the premium just keeps coming.
So people
that's where you make all your profit.
It's almost like there's a plan B for the plan B. There's a backup of the backup.
There is a backup. And, last year, and I don't remember what company it was, we wanted to do a policy. It was a great policy. I wanted to buy it real bad. We looked them up, and they had fallen to a B. And I wouldn't take the risk. I didn't do it. And the guy died 2 months later.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But I didn't take the risk, and I would never do it. We're not ever going to do a B-rated company.
Okay. Good to know. All right. So it sounds like the three risks, even though they're there, it sounds like they're relatively small compared to the risk that a lot of people take when you're, you know, doing an investment on Wall Street. So this may be the opportunity for people to take a little bit more of a conservative path to grow their money. There are a few things that people need to know, though. One of them is how well informed this type of investment actually is, as opposed to Wall Street. We'll get into why people can know so much, how they can know so much before they get into this. We'll get into that here in just a few minutes. But right now, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Every morning around this time, we get into trivia, and you always bring fun, interesting things to the table, whether it's some history about Texas or a place to visit or something to do on vacation, a place to go. So what's the topic this morning?
Today, it's about Texans' boots.
Ooh.
You know, all Texans have boots. If they don't, they're not a true Texan. You know that.
Yes.
And as most people know, if they've seen me out and about in Midland, they know I wear boots. You know, I have five pairs of boots, and I think everybody should have five pairs at least.
We're going to call you Boots Bagby.
That's right, Boot Bagby. But the Lucchese Boot Company, you know, they're a famous Texas boot company. They started in 1823. These guys came over from Italy, the Lucchese brothers. They started the Lucchese Company, and they called it Lucchese Brothers. And then they started making boots. They started making machinery to make boots. And they still make handmade boots. You can still get a handmade boot from Lucchese Company. They're one of the greatest boot companies in the state of Texas. I know a lot of people will have a work pair of boots with them, and then they'll have a dress pair, or maybe two dress pairs. But the custom-made ones are expensive, you know, like $2,000. But the other boots are not. You can get a pair of boots made for $300, you know, walk in the store and get them. But anyway, the Lucchese brothers started. Then in 29, Sam Lucchese got real sick. So his son took over and started making boots. And, of course, they started in San Antonio. Most boot companies started in San Antonio. I don't know, bootmakers just seem to, you know, come to San Antonio. Probably because of the labor force in the 1800s. And then in 1829, they were incorporated. Did you know you could incorporate it in 1829?
I did not know that.
I didn't either. I thought this happened in, you know, the 20s and the 30s. But they did. They incorporated. And in later years, Lyndon Johnson became one of their biggest clients. He bought boots from them for 50 years.
Wow.
John Wayne bought boots from him for like 40 or 50 years.
Really?
Jim Garner. Zsa Zsa Gabor came to Texas to buy her boots.
Wow.
Yes. They have a long list of celebrities that came to Texas to buy their boots. They would come, have their feet measured, and they'd make them a custom pair of boots, sometimes more than one. But all the presidents had Lucchese boots. They would have them made. George W. Bush, He had a pair made, and they were beautiful. But all the presidents, as far as I know, ended up with a pair of Lucchese boots. It's a great company. Then they moved to El Paso. The workforce, I think, was better in our modern times. So they moved to El Paso, started making boots there. I visited them in El Paso, and it's a great company. It's a great story. You know, these immigrants coming from Sicily and starting a business in 1823.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
1823.
I don't know how much. 1823. They couldn't have had much money when they started, but yet they were developing machinery to build boots. They were getting new techniques all the time. And then they sold out to an overall company that was owned by Acme Boots.
Really?
After all these years. But they also sponsor a polo team. Can you imagine?
Really?
Yeah, they have their own polo team. So it's a diversified company started by immigrants who did very well, who became part of the American dream and part of the Texas dream. So when I think about everybody's boots, I always think of Lucchese. I would buy Lucchese first, or if you're like me, I buy custom boots from Mexico. They hand make them over there, and they will embroider your boots for women and do all kinds of wonderful things.
Wow, now that's cool.
It is cool, and I think that every woman should have five pair.
Not six, not four, but five.
Not six, but five. You should have five.
I had no idea that so many big names and famous people and presidents had custom boots made. I didn't know that.
Yes, and they all knew about Lucchese Company. They knew how famous they were, and that they would make them a custom, handmade pair of boots. And the other thing about Lucchese that a lot of people don't know, they're a narrow boot. If you've got a real wide foot, lots of times your feet don't fit Lucchese. But if you've got a slim foot, a Lucchese is a boot for you. But like I said, I don't know how many other celebrities bought boots from Lucchese, but we know Jim Garner had all of his made there, Lyndon Johnson, John Wayne, and Zsa Zsa Gabor. She's the only lady that I know was having hers made there as a movie star.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
That is cool.
Now then, we know you're not from Texas, so I just wanted to remind you, you've got to get out and get some boots.
Actually, oddly enough, I have three pair.
All right. And you haven't been there long.
I know.
Wow. You got the message early. See, I was afraid you didn't have any.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You are going Texan.
I'm doing my best. Yeah.
All right. You've got to do your best every day.
Oh, fascinating. This is Your Money with Fag Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, we were talking a few minutes ago about how well-informed a life settlement is as far as investing goes. Because obviously when people invest in Wall Street, they know a little bit about what they're getting into, but things could happen. With a life settlement, people have information going in that you lay out in very clear terms. You don't have to be a doctor. You don't have to be some kind of an expert in the field. You lay out the entire policy, and they get all this information on something we call page 14.
Yes, page 14 is the key to your policy. Like if you forget who the person you've invested with, what the face amount of the policy is, or if you forget what you're going to make, or the percentage, you go to page 14. Everything is on page 14, and you have signed page 14 saying, I've read it, and I know everything about my policy. So I always tell people, a gentleman called me this week, Faye, I need to know about my policy. I went over everything. I said, do you have your policy handy? He said, I can get it. I said, go to page 14, and we'll talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I reminded him. It tells who the insurance company is. It tells what their rating is. It tells the face amount. Tells how much you invested, what you're going to make. Excuse me. And it tells also if it goes over what it's going to cost you.
Now, the other thing is that when people look at this and they see the information, your long-term investors first, they understand that if a policy is up for investment, they usually just go ahead and do it because they've done this long enough. They know that if it's there, then you've gone through it and it's good. For those who are brand new, I'm sure they want to go through this because they're coming off of what seems, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're coming off of what seems like a very risky, almost like a haphazard type of investment because they don't understand, or sometimes they do understand, but not until it's too late, that when you invest in Wall Street, they can do anything with your money. With a life settlement, people have complete control. Yes, I went in. No, I don't. But they get to look at the information, and they make the decision themselves.
That's right. And then, of course, remember, their money is always handled at the bank. They never write a check to Fay Bagby or any of our companies. The money goes direct to Nevada Trust. And then the account is opened at Nevada Trust. Nevada Trust pays the premiums as they come due. Nevada Trust gets a certified death certificate when they pass away, and then the check goes to the bank. The bank distributes the money in everybody's account. And so it works perfectly. The bank is our trustee for everything we do. They handle the money, they pay the customers, and it makes it a lot safer investment.
So the process is smooth and seamless, and it's really a safe way to transfer money and you get things going.
That's right. And the other thing that people appreciate, if they need some cash, it's not like on Wall Street. They tell you they'll have you money in 7 days or so. You can get the check overnighted to you from the bank. They're glad to do it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. As I told you, that pickup story, back in the summer, the guy needed a new pickup, and he called. He said, "How long would it take for me to get some cash?" I said, "Tomorrow." You know.
They weren't expecting that, were they?
No, they weren't. But you come into the office, you sign for it, and they'll overnight the money to you.
So we've talked about that this is generally a conservative type of investment where people basically set it and forget it. They don't have to be up at night, you know, logging on to see if they still have anything. It is, because all you're doing is you're investing and then you wait until the policy matures and then you get paid. The life of the value of the life insurance policy is not going to go down.
No, a life insurance policy, the life insurance company is not going to call and say, "Oh, by the way, we're going to pay you 50 cents on the dollar." They pay the face amount of the policy, and therefore you know how much you're going to get, you know what your profit is, and it ain't going to change.
So people are getting the idea that this is a really safe type of investment. They understand this is a long-term type of plan. So when somebody's putting together a strategy to retire, with what they need to retire at, whatever level that may be, however much they need in the bank to maintain that lifestyle, or in sometimes even, you know, improve their lifestyle after retirement, they're looking at this over several years. It's not a you're in and you're out type of thing. So for somebody who's saying, "Well, this is really great. I really like, you know, all the security measures. I like how, you know, it doesn't affect or nothing else affects the value of the policy. I like all these things, but I'm 45, I'm 55, and I've waited too long. I should have started on this when I was 30. What do you say to that person?
No, if they have a minimum of $100,000, they can grow that money, they can make money, and they've got 10 years. If you've got 10 years, we can do almost anything. Now, if it's a month away, you've got to come with $300,000, $400,000, $500,000. But if you've got 10 years, we've got all the time in the world.
Another thing to note is that a life settlement is not affected by anything else. So we all know that, you know, things are happening around the world, even in the United States, and so all these other variables can affect somebody's investment in the stock market. With a life settlement, it is its own entity, and nothing else affects it. And I'm sure people enjoy that as well.
That's right, because war won't affect it. It's a set investment. A government shutdown is not going to bother you. Nothing bothers your policy. It doesn't affect it. Like the stock market, every time anybody even says anything, it goes up or it'll go down.
Yeah.
And it's a daily deal. Remember, it dropped 1,000 points one day. It dropped to 800. Now, it can go up, but it can still come down, and people have to worry. That's why everybody gets up at midnight, checks their stock portfolio, says, how much did I lose today? Who wants to do that?
That's not a way to live or plan for retirement.
No. The best way is we let you know when the policy matures. We send you an email. Then 6 to 8 weeks later, you get a check, and it goes in your account, and we do it again.
Okay.
It's the best of all worlds.
I know we touched on it earlier, but I want to emphasize again what it takes to actually be accredited and get involved in the program.
Okay. To be accredited, you've got to have one of two things. You've got to be worth $1 million without your house, or you must make $200,000 a year, including bonuses. Now, when people are adding up their assets, they're always forgetting their 401k counts, their IRAs count, their rent property, their ranch, cattle, whatever they've got. Their assets, you add them all up. You know, we talked about the couple that came in a couple months ago. They said, well, we're not sure we're worth $1 million. And he didn't make that much money. I said, well, go home and add it up. They came back 3 weeks ago. I put them in some policies. They were worth $1.5 million.
Really? And they didn't even know?
They did not know.
See, now that's important because sometimes people forget about 401ks. They don't consider the value of their own business. You know, a lot of business owners who own their own business don't always take that into consideration. And so there may be some elements out there that might actually improve. Except they just forget about it, you know, old 401ks or whatever the case may be. The only thing it does not include is your home main residence.
That's right. And we have people all the time that have changed jobs over the years. They left the old 401ks where they were.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't transfer them. So we take those old 401ks and bring them over. And they said, I didn't know I had that much in that old 401k. It was sitting where, and they weren't even investing it. Once you leave a company, they just leave it right there in the account. That's all they do. They're not going to invest it. They're going to, so it's not even going to grow.
It's just going to sit there stagnant.
Stagnant.
And we say all the time, if you're not growing your money, you're not growing your money.
That's exactly right. And in this world, everything has to have growth or you're not going to be able to retire happy and wealthy and happy. I can tell you that.
So now how is accreditation changed, or how does it change a little bit when somebody, because we talked earlier about, you know, if one person was to get involved, what if like a husband and wife want to do something as a team? Does it change anything?
Yes, it does. They have to have $300,000 in income.
Okay.
If they're doing it by income. If they're not, $1 million will still suffice.
Okay.
On a joint return. But if they're going by what they make, it's got to be $300,000. If they're going by assets, it's still got to be that $1 million.
Do you feel that people feel a little bit more comfortable, especially maybe when they're first starting out, coming in as a couple, or do most people start out as a single investor?
A single investor. It's always a gentleman usually comes and brings me his 401k and some IRAs, maybe some old annuities. And then if the wife is with him, she may have some old annuities she wants to start an account with. She may have an IRA herself. Mm-hmm. So lots of times, it's pretty complicated. We have the husband and wife. They're both throwing papers at me. I want to do this. I want to do that. And we have to go over all this. It's going to take time to figure out what all they can move over and start investing.
Okay. Now, since the whole goal of all of this is to get ready for retirement and grow your wealth, what about somebody who's saying, you know, this is all really great, although I'm not accredited. I don't qualify as far as assets or income or whatever the case may be. What other options do they have? Because you don't want to just abandon retirement. You don't want to just give up on it and plan on working till you fall over. You still want to grow your wealth and retire, but there are other options.
That's right. If they're not qualified, if they're not accredited, we can do annuities. Annuities have been around 140, 50 years. Life insurance companies have more money than the banks. So we know it's a safe investment. I talked about Midland National earlier. You know, they've been in business 100 years, and they're worth $58 billion.
Wow.
So these are the kind of companies we put them in. We don't put them in some little company from Podunk. We're not going to do a B-rated company. It's got to be an A-rated company, even for an annuity. And you've got to have at least $50,000 to do an annuity.
So now, when is it too late to start investing?
I would say if you're 80 years old and haven't done anything to accumulate, it's too late to start accumulating. Now, if you're 80 and you've got $500,000, $300,000 or $1 million or $2 million, if you come in with your children, we'll still let you have an account, but the children have to manage that account with you.
Okay. So do you find a lot of people come in and either maybe right off the bat or even, you know, an investment or two down the road, they bring in their children as like a learning opportunity to kind of teach, hey, this is the kinds of things that you need to do to grow your wealth, to get ready for retirement, to be fiscally responsible. Do you find a lot of people bring in the kids?
I have a lot of people that bring their college-age kids. They do a joint venture with those children. And then they put in an agreement that they cannot take any of this money out till they're 25 to 30, where they're not going to be in college trying to rip off the account. So we have to think about it, because you know how college kids are.
Oh, yeah.
They're not mature enough to be handling this kind of money. So the parents do that. They set it up where they can't touch it right away.
For those young people who are just now starting out with this type of investment, like you were saying, you know, they set it up and they can't touch it till they're 25. When they do hit that age, do you find that by then many of the young people have gotten responsible and they keep investing, or do you find some people actually start to take it out and kind of abandon the whole process? How do they proceed?
Most of them don't, because they've got parents that are watching that account like a hawk. I mean, that's the secret. If the parents weren't watching it, they probably would try that. But most of our people, they watch these accounts like a hawk, as I said. They don't want these kids blowing this money, because they're putting up the money to open the account for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they'll put up $200,000 for the kids, you know, $25,000, $50,000 per child, they do not want them blowing it. And so they will watch them.
So as people get you know, started really, really early, because we talk about sometimes, you know, people wait until they're 45 or 50 or 55 to start investing. But as you see people come in their 20s or even in their 30s, you've got to be thinking, you know, to yourself, wow, this is really a, you know, somebody who really gets it, who really understands the concept. And I would imagine you're probably setting them up to do very, very well, because if they've got 20, 30, 40 years of investing under their belts, by the time they get to retirement age, they've got to be doing better than most people, or they take the opportunity to say, you know, I'm going to retire 15 years early. That's got to be a really great situation to be in, regardless of how they, you know, do their actual retirement, on time or early.
Well, and what I find is people that have worked for one company for 29 or 30 years, they retire. They don't change companies. Now, people that have worked for three or four companies, they will keep working. But people that have worked for one company, they're tired of that company, they want to go home. They don't want to stay. So people that have worked for just one company, when they quit, they quit. It's over.
Mm-hmm.
But people that have worked for three or four employers, they're not as jaded. You know, they don't feel like bad things about the employer. But the others do sometimes. And so they'll just walk off and say, "Faye, I'm through."
When people come see you for the first time, what would be one of the biggest mistakes that people walk in the door with, saying, "Faye, can you fix this?"
If they've gotten in debt, I had people, if you remember, about a year ago, came in, they did a reverse mortgage, brought the money over, and thought we would take it. And I go, "Not on your life. If you had to do a reverse mortgage, you're broke, you don't have any money, you need every dime of that to live on, and we're not doing it." And I sent them home.
Wow.
And
really, I mean, all of these things are for the client's results. It's not for any other reason other than your goal is to get them in a good shape if you can. And there are situations like that where there's just nothing you can do at that point. So at that point, they go home. I would imagine the smart thing to do in that type of situation, start saving money, put money away, start building things up, maybe start with an annuity, maybe build that up, and then maybe move over to a life settlement. Is that a logical progression?
I have some people that can start with an annuity. In 3 or 4 years, we've got enough money, we can go back and go to a life settlement. We do that a lot of times.
Okay.
But so, then I've got people that invest in an annuity, and 6 months later, they need the money. So if we make that mistake, we try not to make it but once.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So really, you can help people out, but at some point they got to participate. And the reason I ask is because I had somebody come in that had made the same mistake several times over the last 20 years or so, or 25, whatever it was, kept doing the same things over and over. They would build things up, and then they would do something that just made no sense whatsoever. They would end up wiping out a majority of their wealth, and then they'd have to start over, and they just weren't responsible. They were not on that trajectory that they needed to be, and they weren't in that mental place of, I need to be conservative. I need to grow my wealth. I need to, you know, put all this away. I need to stop going out, being frugal, spending things on things that I don't need, and I need to get responsible. So you can only take this so far, but people need to be in that place. They need to understand how much money you actually have to retire. We were talking about the two E's, expenses and emergency. So what would you recommend is that magic number? And I know everybody's situation is different, but in general, what is that magic number people should shoot for to retire at?
They should have at least $1 million, but $2 million would make them comfortable. Let's put it that way. Okay. $2 million, they would probably be comfortable the rest of their life. Remember, they're going to live 20 to 25 years.
Yeah.
It's a long, long stretch. And if you've only got 300,000, folks, it'll be gone and you'll be on Social Security and crying.
Yeah. Yeah. Or
I mean,
going back
you're
going to
be crying for making mistakes and not investing your money and growing it for retirement. And I don't know how much they're going to need. But you can't live on $25,000-$30,000 a year. So you don't want that money in 5 years to be gone.
Yeah. Yeah. And the great thing about a life settlement is that you get to that million or 2 million or whatever the magic number is for each individual person, but then they keep doing this, and it is such a conservative type of investment. They don't have to worry about losing their retirement. They can still invest even after retirement because I know we put this in simple terms all the time, but people have different piles of money. It's like, you know, you keep some over here for expenses. You keep some over here to return investment. And so that's how you set this whole thing up, and that's how it works long term.
That's right, and you've got to do that. You can't just say, well, we'll do it tomorrow, we'll do it next week, we'll do it in 6 months. If you procrastinate long enough, you'll wake up some morning and it's retirement's here and you don't have anything.
Yeah.
You know? If you've made bad investments, you need to get over it and get conservative and try to grow your wealth.
Okay. All right, so Faye, for somebody who wants to come see you, what should they do today to get ready to come for your first appointment?
Okay. They need to look at what all they want me to look at. If they've got old annuities, variable annuities, you know, that is really just a mutual fund. So if they're not doing well, if they've had them a long time, bring those. Let's look at their 401k, their IRA, whatever they have that they would like for me to reinvest and to get them on the right path to retirement.
Perfect. Very simple, very easy. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number people can call you to make an appointment to come see you?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.